everyone. Today we have our Mark the Spot service. It is the first one for me. I have never attended one, so I have no point of reference. Do you hear me? Is it working? Yeah. I don't know why. Perhaps Satan is not very pleased and did everything possible to keep some people at home or unable to attend. We are fewer, but we are those who God intended to be and to touch our hearts for sure. You have received not post-it, but slips of paper, two different colors. I will give you instruction what you have to do at the end. I'm afraid that will be the only bit where you will be directly involved in this Mark the Spot service. I hope that bit actually opens the door for far more during this year and the years to come. We will return in the book of Joshua, as I have started last Sunday, in Joshua chapter 1 and a few other bits in the very few chapters. It is not going to be an expository sort of sermon, as I normally like to, because I just want to emphasize several bits about vision today. I hope it might be rather a motivational sort of talk. We have seen in the book of Joshua, in chapter 1, the first 9 verses, how God addresses to Joshua as the future leader of Israel, calling him specifically to do several things. He had called Joshua to let the past go, not to compare with Moses or other leaders in the past, because he is unique and he has a unique challenge and mission ahead. It is the same call for us all, individually and as a community, to let the past go. There is a certain dimension that we still have to keep in relationship to the past, just to look and trace God's goodness and grace in our lives, to truly understand what is God doing and what He has done. For instance, last year and the last 5 years, He has done it for a purpose. And having a good grasp of the past, we may have a good understanding about the future. But there are other things in the past that we need to let go. Then the second call for Joshua, we have observed, is to stand, to arise, not to stand still in the midst of changes, because standing still in the midst of changes means you are going to sink and be overwhelmed. You need to keep going. And he was called to stand and to move on into God's plan for his life. It was also a call to be active, not passive, in terms of or in relationship with God's promises. And if you remember that verse, every bit of land that they are going to step in with their foot has been promised to be given to them. You cannot be passive. God doesn't encourage laziness in terms of either our salvation, we need to work it out to get the most of it, to reach that fullness in Jesus Christ. But also, as a community, in relationship with what God has in mind for us to do in this community and as a mission and the vision that we are about to discuss this morning. Then 3 times, I actually begin with this, God told Joshua to be courageous. Be courageous. And I don't want to repeat that, but that was a very important thing that we observe. It's not that call to be to experience a blind sort of courageous, to be courageous just because you have to be courageous, but God offered him a solid foundation for that, or ground for God's promises, God's precepts, and God's presence, continuous presence in his life. So when we are called to be courageous, it's not just an unsustainable sort of courage, but it's based on God's either promises, precepts, and presence when he calls us to do something. Then, only briefly, we observe that it was a call to prepare. And basically, now, actually, we are moving to the second part of chapter 1, when Joshua addresses his people. Until here, God addressed the leader. Now, the leader addresses his people. And he calls his people to prepare, and then we will see to be responsible. Why? I've already tackled this in chapter 6. After Joshua encountered Jesus Christ himself at the end of chapter 5, we've observed that that expression, the angel of the Lord, refers to Jesus in a manifestation, theophany, called in the Old Testament. And then we cannot divorce chapter 5 through chapter 6. As we know, there are no chapters and verses in the original. It is important to carry on and read it as a whole. Verse 2 in chapter 6, the Lord, the same encounter, the same presence that Joshua observed and worshipped, says now, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands. Have vision. And the term there is roeh, the same term that often is referred to God's prophets in the Old Testament. Have vision. And now the Lord speaks to Joshua, who knows what it means to have vision. I want to remind you, and I have preached in depth about this about 4 years ago, as I told last Sunday, that back almost 40 years before, Joshua was among the other 12, the other 11. 12 spies sent to check if the promised land is as God described it. Fertile, good, wonderful. And while 10 observed only the obstacles, only the problems they are about to face, Joshua and Caleb, through the eyes of faith in God, they come back and they had a different opinion. Why? Because they had a different vision. While the others looked on what they could see with their physical eyes, Joshua looks through his eyes of faith and he says, yes, there are obstacles, but there are great opportunities with the Lord. Yes, there are giants there. There are 45 cities. Yes, there are problems. But it's a lot of potential because God is going to be with us. We are going to devour them. God has given them already in our hands. However, the whole people of Israel trusted more in the tent, those 10. Rather, those who had vision. Trusted more in those who could describe things according to what they've seen with their physical eyes, rather than to trust those two that could see beyond what can be seen with their physical eyes. And now, God comes back to Joshua and say, you see? And I just imagine Joshua nodding his head, yes, Lord, I know. 40 years I had this vision in my mind. And now it's time for it. Now is the right time. I'm ready. So now, with this idea in mind, come back to chapter 1. And we will just look briefly from verse 10. To 16 to observe, well, to 18 actually, to observe several things. I'm not going to read it, but have your Bible open there. In verse 10 and 11 says, so Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now, you will cross, not may cross, you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving you for your own. Get ready. This is a call of preparation. When you have a vision, you start preparing as it's going to happen. You see, there are many ways in which we can define vision. And vision sometimes is a funny thing. Some people have it, some people don't have it, and some people just think they have it. Those who think they have it, it always seems to try and run the show to show that they have it, but they never prepare consistently for something that is going to come. There are many ways in which we can define what vision is. Vision is a discovery of God's plan as it relates to your life. It can be described like this. Vision is also a foresight with insight. And I like this one. It is a mental picture of a thing that God is going to do it in us or for us. And you see it insight. It's hard to explain it sometimes. Vision also means beginning a thing with the end in mind. But one definition that I really like, I adapted a little bit, is this one. Vision is the capacity to see beyond what can be seen and to believe in something that others cannot see and prepare and plan for it. And this is what Joshua does right here. Get ready. Prepare provisions. In 3 days, we are going into the country. And remember, I have mentioned last Sunday that for 40 years, they had manna. They had manna provided by God. Well, perhaps it was a little bit boring to have it every day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, the same manna. Yes, delicious at the beginning, but 40 years every day. A little bit boring, but at least predictable. And when, you know, you get used with these predictable things. Oh, you know what's going to happen. You come to a church, you go there. And when anything comes different than what you predicted, we get sometimes disturbed, afraid, out of our comfort zone, and so on. And this is what happens there. By faith, Joshua says, you know, get ready, prepare. Actually, manna is going to stop for you. You haven't cooked for so many years. Those wives had no idea perhaps what to cook. We talk about a new generation. Imagine you are raising your sons and daughters only with cornflakes for 40 years, and then suddenly they marry with another person and they are expected to cook. It's not easy. And they had to do it in 3 days. And I told you that that manna actually was just an appetizer for what it was about to be in Canaan. However, I don't want to return to that real meaning, but to stress out what does it mean to prepare when you have a vision. In this context, if you like, preparation is an act of faith. It's the highest act of faith. You don't prepare if you don't have faith that something is going to happen after that. It's like I have heard this years and years ago when I was very young in my local church in a country where they have a drought for so many years, and suddenly a preacher preached and said, you know, today or this afternoon when you come to church, it will rain. Trust me, I sense that from the Lord, whatever. It's just a story. But in that afternoon when people came to church, none of them brought the umbrellas. You know, preparation is an act of faith. And bear this in mind, because later on, when we are going to come closer to us, where God may want us to take these years, we need to think, how can we prepare for that? But preparation is an act of faith. Actually, let's give you another example. When we start going to school, when you train hard, and even sometimes, like my wife, later in life, what do you prepare for? Why you start studying when you are almost 40? Why? Because you have faith that you are changed, you are about to change career, it's going to be better, you have a dream that you want to fulfill. You don't go to school, to university, that late in life, if you don't have a dream and you don't have faith in that dream or vision. And they've done this. They have prepared. But now, let's read from verse 12. I'm actually just going to skim through. We may not get the full picture of what's going on from verse 12. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you after he said, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan. But all you fighting men ready for battle must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord give them rest. What's going on here? We may not fully understand without having the whole picture in mind in number 32. Way back, while they were wandering in the wilderness, these 2.5 tribes saw this portion of land, fertile, good, east of Jordan, but not part of Canaan, not part of the promised land. And they said, who knows in their mind when, if we will ever cross Jordan to get in possession of our promises, to enjoy the promised land. Why don't we settle here? Moses, you know, we have a small request. Give us this portion of land. We don't want to wait until the whole people will cross the other side. We want to enjoy it here. It was a bit of a negotiation in between them and Moses, and Moses at the end gave up and said, okay, you can have it. You can have it. But promise one thing. And this is faith again. This is faith in the vision, in what God promises. When, not if, when the time will come, when we will get into Canaan, don't forget about your brothers. Go along and help them to get in possession what I promised them. You will remain where you claimed. But when that time will come, go and help them. And this is what Joshua does right now. He comes to them and says, remember that time? Okay, now it's time to leave your livestock, your wives, your family, but you men ready for battle, fulfill your promises. It is a call for responsibility. Because a vision requires not just preparation, but requires responsibility, even though you may not fully trust in those who have it. You see, there are times when God may give a vision to a leader or to a group of people, but not the whole community fully grasp it. Not the whole community fully get it and is ready for it. And this, although we are speaking about a vision, we observe a bit of division right now. Because honestly, wherever you look, in the Bible or in our own context, in churches, wherever, in God's ministry. Wherever God gives a big vision, unfortunately, people of God experience a division. Those who are maybe either just content with what they have, like these people, they said, you know, it's good enough. Why shall we cross on the other side? Well, because God said that. Well, because it's His promises for you. Yeah, but we enjoy here. Warren Worsby refers to these 2.5 tribes being a picture for the borderline Christians. Those who would like to enjoy just on the borderline of Christianity. Remember what I've explained last Sunday. They've been saved. They are out of Egypt. Well, they are sick of being in the wilderness too. But let's live close to Canaan, close to that abundance you have or you can experience in Christ. Not on the other side, because it does require too much commitment. Waiting, expectation, faith. It's too much. Borderline Christians. How many of them in our days? But when it comes for a community of faith like us, a church where God brings perhaps a big vision, a new vision, after years settling in a specific experience, there are people that they will say, we are happy where we are. We don't need to go on. And for these people, although the Bible acknowledges they are, the Word of God today say, be responsible. If you don't fully trust in that, if you don't fully grasp it, if you are not fully for it, at least, go and help how you can. You might not be that person that receive a full vision from God, and not people have it. A big dream. But you might end up close to people that have a dream. You don't know how. You just ended up being in that circle, in that community, when God is about to bring a new dream. And it's not a coincidence that you are there. Because God is calling you at least to be responsible and support them. Let me give you another example. Joseph in the Old Testament. Oh, maybe at some point we will fully return at him to discuss about vision. As I said the other Sunday, maybe at Nehemiah. There are so many good examples in the Bible. He was a dreamer. God gave him a vision. But in order to fulfill that vision, it took time, a hard life for Joseph, and in prison, he had few other people that he had to support and to support their dream. When Pharaoh had a dream, yeah, it is a different sort of dream, I know. That wasn't necessarily a vision that we refer to, but it was a dream. Well, before that, actually, some of his prisoners had it. While he was waiting to fulfill his own dream, he was called to fulfill other people's dream, to help them to fulfill it. So if you are one of them, just wait for your time. But be supportive for others. And one way in which we all can support one another's dream and the whole community dream that God is about to give. One wonderful way in which Joshua experienced what it means to have that support way back in Exodus 17, just a few months after they were out of Egypt, it is through prayer. It is through prayer. You may not be able to do much at this stage of your life, but prayer, it is a significant thing. And we have a new way of doing prayer, of praying, and we are about to revive this prayer ministry in our church because it's vital. And we all need it. And all Joshua's need prayer. Way back in Exodus 17, when they were at Rephidim, and once Moses said, Joshua, take your sword, take your people. He wasn't the chief commander. He wasn't a great leader at that time. It was Moses. But Moses said, you go and lead the people in the battle because I have a small vocation. Joking. And he took Aaron and Hur. How do you pronounce this? Her, on the mountain. And you know the story when Moses stays with his arm lifted up towards heaven, praying for Joshua. But at some point, he gets tired. He lets his arms down, and Joshua loses the battles, and he's weak. Not because he didn't spend enough time in prayer, Joshua. Not because he didn't prepare his sermons enough. Not because he didn't study 1 week and work 30 hours on his notes. No. But because Moses was weak and couldn't lift up his hands towards heaven in prayer for Joshua. This is a wonderful picture in which we can understand how can we support one another and how we are interconnected and how we are about to work. And Joshua had learned this lesson that each of God's people are important and each of God's people need to be involved. And look at the transition later on as you read through the chapters. When you come to read about crossing the Jordan and then in chapter 6, conquering Jericho, you see a huge difference between Moses' approach and Joshua's approach. While Moses was a great man of God, but he was called to be a solo type of leader. He was the man that mainly does everything on his own. He had to receive his father-in-law, Jethro, advice. Well, you exhaust yourself and you exhaust these people, because you do everything on your own. You need few other people. He gathers another 70, but he stays the main one. Everywhere you see a miracle, as I said the other Sunday, is Moses. Do they need to cross the Red Sea? Moses and his staff, nothing else. Joshua in the Jordan? No, it's not the same experience. Joshua has to involve people from the congregation. So, you know, we need a procession, we need the priest, we need the ark of God, we need people stepping the Jordan with water up to here. You know, you need to be involved. Oh, from a solo type of leadership to a community or plurality of leaders. And you may see the same approach in our church too. When they had to conquer the walls of Jericho, he could just say, where is Moses' stuff? I need to use it. Boom. It's not so. He says, you know, all of us, including those who had left their livestock, their families, east of Jordan, and came to be responsible to support their brothers. And imagine them. We've been on this even before Christmas when we observed Rahab's experience. But imagine them, all these 2.5 tribes, hearing Joshua's command. You know, we are just going to walk around the walls. You don't need to use your sword. You don't need to use anything, you know, in relationship to battles and army and things like that. But we just walk. It's just a procession. And at the end, you walk 7 times, and then you just shout from all your lungs, you know, as powerful as you can. They say, for that you called us? We could have rested on the other side. Yeah, but you need to learn a lesson. You need to be part of what we are about to do together in this. It may sound ridiculous, but this is what God told Joshua to do. Because the lesson here is not just a call to responsibility, but a call to wholeness, to the whole congregation to be involved when God gives a vision. As scary it may sound, as ridiculous it may look, when God is about to do something, He doesn't want to rip you from experience that joy of being part. No one there could said, this is Joshua's vision only. And few people who trusted, it was theirs. It was theirs. And they were about to embrace it and experience, because they were all involved in it. Even those, as I said before, who didn't fully trust it initially, who years ago said, it's easier to stay here. But now they were called to be responsible. Another thing I want to stress out, what sort of vision is this? It is a vision for salvation. In chapter 2, when Joshua selects again a group of spies to go with a different intention, it's important to realize this, with a different motivation, not to check if the land is as God promised to be. He knew it. He's been there. He had faith in that. But to strategize, it's a different approach. And while they were there as spy with a mission, they encounter Rahab. Remember the story. I don't want to recap it. Sometimes in our lives, you may be so much observed by what you do and what you've been told to do, but that specific mission, that you lose the vision. And they knew that they are the people of God. And when they observe what? Faith. Faith in a pagan's life. That vision comprehend her, included her. They were not exclusive. They said, yes, she does not belong to the people of God. She actually belongs from those that we are about to destroy. We are against. But why are we against? Because they don't have faith. They are against God. Look at this lady, a prostitute. She has faith in our God. Not just faith, but stronger faith that our people had in our God 40 years ago. And as you read through chapter 2, you cannot be just... It's amazing to observe in verse 9, what she says, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. Why? We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt. So 40 years ago, when the first group of spies were in this country, the people in that country melted of fear. And this prostitute knew that their God is great. And she had faith in Him. And Joshua's colleagues, a part of Caleb, had not that faith. And the whole people of Israel couldn't prove the same level of faith. So when they had this vision, this mission, because they have a vision for the lost, they observed faith and they included her, and she was saved and her family, and she actually ended up in the genealogy of Jesus. Now for our church, when we come about vision, to discuss about vision, do we have a vision for the lost? Or are we so absorbed by our programs, our daily activities, everything that we do mechanically sometimes, because we have a mission, but without a vision? And we always need both. We have a great mission as a church. We just need a little bit of a greater vision. For the lost, for all people, for the world, for the word in Erdington, for the word in Birmingham, and for the whole world beyond us. As a church, we are called to do that. And we've been given great opportunities that other churches don't have it. Great opportunities. Groups of people that are coming and knocking on the door, can we use your premises? Just because you are there in the good position, and you may think, what great. Well, you have a car park, not many churches have it. It's there for a reason. Well, you are close to Spaghetti Junction. It's for a reason. Well, you have a quite diverse community, and even a Romanian pastor, come on, you know. So you must accept others, huh? And what do you see when these sort of groups of people may come? Obstacles? Congestions? Car park issues? Rushing up? Other things? Problems? Or potential and opportunities? Yes, there are. There are obstacles. There are problems. But beyond that, there are opportunities and privileges and potential. And why don't you think that, well, while others come and knock on the door and say, can we? God actually may want to expand us, stretch us, to get out of our comfort zone, to be courageous and to dream more. In Proverbs 29, there is a verse there, without vision, people perish. It is not without mission, it's without vision. People perish. Whereas there is no vision, no revelation, no understanding of what God wants for his people in the future. A vision reflects a measurable, desirable thing that you want to achieve in the future. A mission reflects who we are and what we are called to do. A vision reflects where we are about to go, to arrive. A vision always needs to be greater than us. To live for something that is far greater than you. To be so motivated that every time you wake up, you have a dream to fulfill, and you are never too old. Remember of Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones. That's how he pronounced. I have a dream. And his dream has been accomplished. When God came to Abraham, he was 75. When he came to Moses, he was 80. When he came to Joshua at this time, he was 80 again. You may say, yes, but they lived longer. Well, only 110, Joshua. We have 200 already in our congregation. It's not, never too late. Open with me to Acts chapter 2, please. I know, it's about Pentecost. And we still have a lot of time to get there. But there is here a verse that for the first time resonated with me in a unique way. I have preached from Acts 2 about Holy Spirit and his ministry, his person and everything. But look here how Peter quotes a verse from Joel. And he says, in the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. This is what I envision for our church. That young men, young people, not necessarily men, will have visions. And old men, we have plenty, isn't it? Well, young, second youth, let's put it this way. Dream dreams. Dream dreams. What is your greater dream? From now on. Do you have a dream? What is your dream for our church? You have heard me several times describing how I came to this country, how God gave me a vision for Emmaus and so on. I don't want to repeat the whole story, although perhaps would have been good to hear it once again. But I've never told you how the whole Emmaus vision concept came together and when it all started. Those of you who may know a little bit Romanian or English in the congregation, when do you think it started and where? Yeah, way back. I came in this country in 2012, April, to start the Emmaus Church. So we've designed the logo, and at the back there are still plenty leaflets from the original leaflets that we've designed in Romania. Before even stepping in Birmingham, without placing my foot in any part of Birmingham, 97% of what is in this leaflet was written in Romania. Logo was designed by Chris and Nicoletta, those of you who may remember. Vision statement, mission statement, values, and almost everything was done in Romania. On 8th of March 2012 was presented in Golgotha Baptist Church in a long PowerPoint presentation, and I have never came to Birmingham before I did that presentation. Sorry, that was first time in January, and then I came 8, 9, and 10 March in Birmingham, 3 days just to see with my eyes what I have seen with my faith. But Emmaus didn't start then. You know when it started? In 2007, towards the end of 2007, I was still studying for my master's degree in Durham University, northeast of England. I knew I'm going to complete my course in March 2008, and I'm going to go back in Romania. I knew where I'm going to minister, same church, same things. I wanted something new. I start dreaming when I'll go back to see a church that goes beyond its walls, to have a vision for the city, to reach others, to do a ministry. And I knew I cannot change overnight that church. It has been through changes for so long already. So I thought, maybe I'll start a separate ministry that I'll attach it to the church. And I wasn't really sure. Towards the end, I cannot remember the month, of 2007, I was invited to preach in a Methodist church in Gateshead, northeast of England, close to Newcastle, upon Tyne. Going there, a large, big, maybe four times bigger building than this, Methodist church. And I'm going inside, only in a little corner, with some rope separation, so on, so people knew where they gather, a dozen of people, 12, 15 people, in a building that could accommodate at least 500. All of them in their second youth, after 70. It just happened that at that time I preached from Joshua, a completely different sermon. But I preached from Joshua. And then when we went for a cup of tea at the back, as we have names, it was this little room. And I saw the name, Emmaus Room. It was just the name. I haven't asked why, nothing. And it all started at that time. What does Emmaus mean? Well, I don't know what the Emmaus means. I know what happened on the way to Emmaus, in that little room in Emmaus, where these two disciples of Jesus couldn't recognize him. They thought he is a stranger. But then inside there, when he broke the bread, in that sweet, deep fellowship, their eyes opened and they recognized him. I'm not sure what they had in mind when they chose that name. I just went home. I was living with Ellen at that time in a little flat, and I started writing down several pages with a vision that I had. I want to start a ministry called Emmaus in Romania, where I want people to see God,
to see Jesus, to experience him in a unique way. When they come and they will meet us to see beyond what can be seen, to not see just a religion, not just a ritual, but to see Jesus in our lives, in the way we do things, to encounter him. And I want our church, Golgotha, in Romania, to see beyond its walls, to have a larger vision. So I went home and I started this charity called Emmaus in Romania, founded in 2008. Which I ran it until 2012, when I passed it on to another friend of mine. And now, look how God, I mean, I often look back, and as I said earlier on, I like to connect the past with the future. It all started where? In England. And at that time, I thought it's for Romania. Then, when God called me from Romania to come back in England, I knew it's going to be greater. It's Emmaus Ministry in England, Emmaus International Ministry, when we had to register it in England with the Charity Commission. It's not Emmaus Church, by the way. It's called Emmaus International Ministries, with an S at the end, more than one. Then in Romania, when I had to find a person to carry on the ministry, because I couldn't be with my foot in two boats, guess who is running it right now? An English person. Ben Wells, a friend of mine that Peter knows him, a disciple of mine, that came to Christ a few months after I moved back from England to Romania and met him on the street and shared Christ with him. And he was doing voluntary work, and he committed his life to Christ. And then I baptized him. And then I have another suggestion for him, just as a suggestion. What do you think about this girl that comes in this group? And they ended up marrying. And I ended up marrying them. And still very close friends. So an English person living in Romania for almost 12 years now runs an Emmaus ministry, even an Emmaus football club right now. And the Romanian guy coming back in England started this. But everything at its foundation was this concept of opening your eyes to see beyond what can be seen. And Joshua was told by God, see, go back to chapter 6 as we conclude. Before this verse 2, in between his encounter with Jesus at the end of chapter 5, actually, go a little bit in chapter 5. The end, the last part of verse 14. After Joshua fell at the ground, and he asks, what message does my Lord have for his servant? What message? And then verse 15, the commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. And you think, is this the message? No. That's what we immediately can conclude. No. But in order to get the message, consecrate yourself. Sanctify yourself. Take your shoes off, because you are standing on holy ground. But get the message now. Turn the page if you have to. In my Bible, I have to. Now, the gates of Jericho were securely buried because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. It's unreachable. It's unconquerable. Jericho is fortified. This is just, by the way, this is what happened in the city. And now this is the message. See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands. Although it seems to be impossible. That's how I understand this bit. When I give you a mission and I give you a vision, don't dare you, Joshua, think you can conquer it, you can achieve it in your own strength. It's not about your sword here. It's not about your experience. I know you are a victorious soldier. I know you have a lot under your belt. But I give you such a big vision that you need to take your shoes off, first of all, to consecrate, to realize that I am the one who I'm going to give it in your hand. And it's not for just for curiosity that said the first bit here in 6:1, how the Jericho was at that point, unconquerable. But see, before it's going to happen, you have to see it in your hands. This is vision. Prepare for it, the highest act of faith. So, what do you see for our church? What do you